Welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, bringing the tales and stories of the ancient Celts to your fireside.
Episode 32, Fairy Days and Fairy Nights.
Hello, welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show. I'm Gary.
And I'm Ruth. If you'd like to send us a message or some feedback, or drop us a line, you can do so at garyandruth@celticmythpodshow.com, or catch us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll have a look at the things we've got available for you on our website at celticmythpodshow.com.
That's true. And it's well worth checking out our show notes as well. They tell you more about the story that you're going to be listening to, and show you all the sources that we've used, so you can go a bit deeper if you fancy. We've also got a list of the characters' names, so you can see how the strange-sounding names look written down.
And they are strange-sounding. Oh, and one other thing.
What did I miss?
Ah, well, a big, big thank you to Dave the Bard and his lovely wife, Kerry Lee,
yes,
who've agreed to help us out by playing some characters for us over the next few shows.
Yes, thank you so much, guys. You can find out a little more about pagan folk singer Dave and the fabulous artist Kerry Lee in the show notes.
And she's turning out to be a very good method actress as well.
Yes.
Superb. We're ready to go then.
Yep, I hope so.
Excellent.
So, have we got any news and views?
Yeah, we have actually. I thought it was about time that we announced we're going to close the forums down.
Really?
Well,
I suppose they've been quiet for so long. And we always forget to pop in and check them. So I guess, yeah, we did think that it would be one less confusing thing to find on the website.
Well, and also that Facebook really has taken over the forums now.
Yeah, so people talk to us there more than anywhere, don't
absolutely.
They?
Absolutely. So come and find us on Facebook. That now seems to be the most common ways that people stay in touch these days.
Yeah, and we'll try and get onto Twitter as often as we can as well.
And obviously, don't forget email. We're always available by email.
Yeah, definitely. And the contact details for Facebook and Twitter, as well as our email, can be found on the website and also in the show notes for this episode.
Which is brilliant. Now, where do we go from here?
It's time for the story.
So remind us what happened last time, because it's been a little while.
It has. A noble hero, Puich, the Prince of Duvid, has met with a Raun, Lord of the Underworld, on an ill-fated hunting trip. After promising to make up for his mistake, a Raun asks Puich to fight a single combat in his place. The dread lord then places his own shape upon Puich and takes on Puich's shape. He guides Puich through the mists and the shadows between the worlds until Puich rides out into the bright grasses of the other world. There he leaves him as Puich rides slowly towards the halls of the dead. Huge arches of ancient cold granite soared up away from Puich's awe-filled gaze as he climbed down from the broad back of stone around mighty stallion. He glanced again at the huge buttresses of grey stone blocks, twice the height of a man, pushing the ancient walls of the Dreadlord's court high into the rarefied air. Graceful pathways flew across between high, slender towers like ribbons strung between tree branches. A few brave souls were strolling across them. His eyes came back down to the vast oaken doors, each two horses wide, and he couldn't tell how many men high. As Storm was led away, He walked next to the old man, liveried in grey and black, into the gaping maw of those vast doors, and into the hall beyond. The metal hinges and braces holding the doors upright were as broad as his chest, gleaming as if freshly forged, and stretched across each door. Dusky sunshine illuminated the moat-filled air beyond, and the thronged interior gradually became lighter as his eyes grew accustomed to being inside and away from the extra colours and the brightness of the outside world. The thrum of conversations filled his ears, and all saluted him as he walked by, small groups of close companions coming to join him. Puig and his retinue moved on towards a wide corridor and were joined by a young maiden, clad in a pale blue shift with a cascade of dark curls and braids that bounced as she walked. She took Puig's cloak from him, and he noticed that in certain lights her eyes seemed to change colour. Come to that, so did the colour of her hair.
Good hunting, my lord.
Puig was stunned at this young girl, as her outline seemed to blur, and it was only with an act of will that he managed to bring her into focus again. Was he sick or feverish in some way? Deep memories of Arounds were beginning to surface through his mind, like the slow shifting sands on the seabed. Elaine looked at him curiously, as if seeing him for the first time. The old man in grey and black with all the others just kept walking.
I see my lord was successful in his hunt.
Yes, we caught a stag.
The memory surfaced through the ocean swell of his deep mind, like a bubble bursting through. This girl was not mortal. She was Fae of the Tulwith Teg. There were many who stayed and danced at the court for reasons of their own, reasons which would not fit from around memories into his own mind.
Thank you, Elaine.
His eyes sought hers, until it became clear that she was not going to declare that some strange immortal was wearing the shape of the lord of this land. So he relaxed a little, and they walked on. As their footsteps resounded in the still air, Puig looked all around himself at the tall corridor. He gazed at the walls with their carven frescoes, and then suddenly slowed down until he almost stumbled. These beautiful carvings were moving. Here he saw one that depicted a battle scene of men wearing metal armour, carrying strangely shaped spears, and huddled together under a wall of square shields. Surely these were the Romani he had heard about. They stood on the summit of a hill as others ran towards them across a plain, preceded by chariots, rushing up to them with the champions calling out their taunts. These men, who looked so much like his ancestors, spilled onto the wall of shields like a wave breaking on rocks, just as unseen cavalry hit them from both sides. And Puig's eyes welled up as his ancestors died in their thousands. He realized that both the old man and Elaine were watching him as he had come to a standstill, and the groups behind him had stopped talking. He quickly started moving again, his eyes scanning every detail of each of the mural sculptings that they passed. Barely within 200 yards, his skin started to crawl as they rounded a corner and came face to face with a very familiar scene. There was a grove of trees and two mighty warriors facing each other, each with a pack of dogs at his back and a fresh kill on the ground between them. One of the warriors was Puig himself, and the other... Elaine skipped to his side and looped her arm through his.
Come on, my lord. You must be dry and dusty in your hunting garb. Surely you want to rest a while before the feasting starts?
He let himself be led, staring in wonderment at the scenes around him in this colonnade of memories. Some were so alien to his experience that he could not explain or even remember afterwards what was on them. but some. Some were of him. He himself was sat on a mound with his true companions around him, just as an incredibly beautiful woman rode up to them. And then Elaine rushed him past before he could take in any more details, and he made a mental note that he would go back and study those in more detail later on. She and the old man, whose name Quich learned much later on was Berwin, led him to his apartments before she handed him a fresh robe of golden silk with exquisite brocade about the hems. His cloak had seemingly disappeared, and Elaine soon followed him. Bemused and confused as the memories were dripping into his brain, Quich sat down on the edge of the bed as Berwin started to tug at his boots. Others came with a bowl of warm water and some cloths for him to wash with, then faded back into the corners.
Is it a cup of mead or food before supper you'll be wanting, my lord? Or just to be resting?
I think I'll just be taking it easy,
said Quich, who had become increasingly fatigued as his day's excitement and the weight of a round of memories were now taking their toll on him. Other pages and equerries stepped forward again from the back of the huge, luxurious apartment, and at Berwin's direction helped Quich strip off the rest of his hunting clothes. Quich saw them all withdraw out of the corner of his eye as he stretched out on the oh-so-soft furs. He awoke after what seemed like only moments, but the shadows coming in through the high windows meant that the low sun was dipping towards the horizon. His nose was pleased to tell him that food was being cooked nearby, and yet his stomach growled its displeasure as it informed him that he was indeed very, very hungry. Surfacing knowledge informed him that now he should go to the main hall, and Quich needed no more prompting to swing his legs over the bed and slip the soft leather boots he found there onto his feet. Pages rushed forward to dress him in the gold-coloured chlen. He was handed rings and a huge golden torque which he pulls onto his neck. Then he waved them all away as he looped a jewelled belt around his waist, adjusted it to what he hoped was a rakish angle, and strode out of the room, allowing his nose to guide him. His retinue seemed to appear out of nowhere to accompany him, and they all strode through the stone corridors before arriving at the great doorways leading to the kitchens. Realizing his mistake, he allowed the memory to show him the route to the hall, and they all finally entered the great feasting hall. The conversation around him died to a low murmur, and everybody stood as he strode down between the rows of tables, wide columns and wolfhounds, towards the high dais at the far end. He noticed a few empty tables around him, and they were slowly filling up as other people filed in from other doorways. Nobody had started on their meal. As he started to mount the steps of the dais, he noticed two ornately carved thrones at the head of the table, one of which was obviously waiting for him, its writhing tree limb arms and back beckoning to him with words of sweet comfort. A tall, high-browed noble was sitting next to the furthest throne, and Quich knew that he should sit on that noble chair. So he took his seat in that throne, and the whole hall sat down with him. He smiled at the stern face of the Fey Earl next to him, a man whose armour shimmered with the light of a dappled dew pond, and yet whose eyes still held the light humour of the Fey.
How fares your realm, my lord?
It is well, Lord Oran. The season of ice stretches thin fingers over the still waters.
As it should,
said Quich, even more confused than he was before, and yet somehow knowing that he had said the right things. He took a taste of the mead in his goblet to cover the confusion, and glanced around at the hall as the liquid gold tracery found its warm way throughout his body. The wide columns in and around the hall were carved to look like the massive trunks of huge ancient trees, trees whose boughs stretched across the high vaulted roof and whose leaves made up the tiles that sheltered them. Lanterns of bright fire were hung on gilded ropes from those boughs to illumine the rapidly darkening hall, filling it with colours of ruddy sunset and warm hearth fire. Amidst the gentle strains of minstrel muse, troops of mighty warriors came in, shaking the snow off their fur-covered robes as they threw them down. They were troops who were arrayed in shining glory, with long spears like ice shards. Each man turned towards him and bowed his head in salute to their lord, before they sat down in obvious joy, laughing and talking at the long tables. The shining ones were everywhere, flitting gracefully amongst the tables, occasionally settling, and small twig-like bundles with too many hands swung amongst the branches, occasionally dropping down to swipe a spoon or a hairbrush from an unsuspecting feaster. Shadows, gathering along the walls, would occasionally disgorge a shard of darkness that leapt across the room, or flew high into the rafters, glowering revelers. Quick watched all these wonders with a growing sense of numbness. There was just too much going on here for him to focus on. The bright sound of melodic birdsong rang clearly through the hall, and all fell still and silent. A garlanded door, previously unseen, had opened off to Puig's right, and a small group of brightly coloured birds took wing through this opening to settle amongst the leaves and boughs above his head. He stood to welcome the Queen and her ladies as they entered the hall. She and her maidens glided softly and slowly towards Puig, and he remained there, bowing his own head before her breathtaking beauty. Never had he seen any woman in flesh or dream or wish that was ever as fair as this flaxen-haired lady, clad in the most brilliant golden yellow of satins. She smiled at him as she sat, the golden ribbons weaved amongst the intricate braids of her hair dancing about her ears, and Puig's heart burst with a glowing sense of wonderment, admiration, and desire for this most perfect of women. The rest of the hall waited, and Puig realized that he'd been left standing there in silence, gazing at her.
My lord?
She asked, with a hint of a smile in her voice.
My lady. Long has the day been on the hunt, and many fair wonders have I seen, but none compares to the beauty that I now behold.
You speak of me too highly, my lord.
Nay, he but speaks the simple truth, my lady. Your light does but show us all the way.
And your smile does warm my heart.
The queen raised her fan, gently covering her face as she said,
Come, gentles all, let us toast the hunt and eat this fine food. We will all starve if all we have to eat is the honey in your words.
Four men entered the hall at that moment, carrying a pole with the stag tied to it that Arround's pack had brought down. Puig saw it and realised that he, so to speak, had captured that stag, and the honour should go to the noble beast. He stood, raising his cup, and everyone else stood with him.
To the hunters! And that most noble of animals, the stag, the gift that has fed us and clothed us from the beginning. To the hunt! To the hunt! And the skin, my lady, is for you to help keep you warm on cold winter nights.
But my lord, I have you.
Puig and the company sat down then and fell upon the meat before him, his eyes wandering over those below the top table. Everyone else began their own meals. As he ate, he watched the minstrels perform their glorious music, snatching glances at the queen as her fey handmaiden Gwyneth leant in to provide her with a bowl of clean water for her delicate fingers, or a cloth to gently wipe her soft mouth.
she tilted her head gently towards him, causing the end of a golden braid to catch the light as brightly as sudden sunshine flits through the leaves of a tree, and asked,
"Are you especially hungry today, my lord?"
Quick felt as though he'd been caught with his hand in the honey jar, and quickly he turned back to the sumptuously cooked meal he'd been eating, saying,
"I am that, my lady. It has been a long day."
"I thought perhaps you had another provender on your mind, my lord."
"Oh, a feast to surpass all others, my lady."
She ducked her head behind her fan again, her cheeks faintly flushing. Quick felt far more clumsy and embarrassed than he had done as a young man, when tempting the pretty maids at home to accompany him to the woods. He turned his attention back to the amazing meal in front of him. Never had he tasted meat so tender, warm bread so flavourful, or fruits of the field so sweet. He was just finishing off his second platter when the music became far more ethereal. Curious, he glanced around to see why the pace had changed, and was amazed to see a score of the most beautiful shining ones skip, twirl, and pirouette into the space before the main table. They began to dance, males and females both, a dance whose pattern was never the same, and yet whose lines drew the eye into visions of exquisite, dreamy slumber, into realms of half-seen silver moonlight, warm, hazy afternoon sunshine. This, he realised, was the famed dance of the Tulwith Tek, a dance from which few mortals ever escaped unharmed. How lucky he was to be merely watching. The rest of the evening passed far too quickly for Puig's liking. Much of it he spent in deep conversation with the Queen, delighted at the ease with which she talked of all things. She would speak of the arts of war just as easily as she would the tapestry work that she and her handmaidens had been making that day, and all the time making Puig feel like he was the most important person in the whole world. His head swam, and it was with a deep sadness and yet an increasing nervousness that he realised that she was becoming restless and about to stand and leave the hall. Two handmaidens, one with hair dark as a raven's wing, and Fae Gwyneth with her blonde tresses, helped her out of her throne, and with her other maidens, some gathering her skirts for her, she walked back towards the doorway through which she'd entered. The hall stood in silence as she passed, stopping only twice to talk to two courtiers on the way out. There was a rustling above their heads, and amidst the flurry of wings, the door closed behind her. Puig sat back down in heaviness and awaited the beginning of the men's conversation, throwing bones and scraps to the wolfhounds at his feet. Much as in his own kingdom, it began bawdy and ended even bawdier, with men drifting drunkenly off towards their own chambers. Puig tried his best to mix in with these strange folk, names and faces, memories and histories all floating before him in a haze, whilst his thoughts were far off in an unseen bedchamber. As soon as was proper, he upended his cup, and he and his retainers made his way back to his own chambers. Sleep was the furthest thing from his mind, filled as he was with a strange mixture of apprehension and excitement. He arrived in his apartment, shut the door, and stewards helped him make ready for bed. Waiting just long enough, he arose, had a furred robe thrown around his shoulders, and talking quietly to two knights, made his way through the chill grey stone corridors towards the Queen's chamber, trees on the walls seeming to rustle as he passed. The door opened at his approach, and the matronly chamber maiden who had opened it shuffled away as he entered. Closing the door behind him, Puig glanced around the Queen's bedchamber, at the beautifully carved bed with roses in full bloom glowing around its pillars, in its intricately woven curtains neatly drawn, at the maids settling for sleep on their pallets a distance away, at the other rich, beautiful furnishings, and back again quickly to the bed.
Thoughts rushed through his head like, what should he do? Idiotic question. Go to the bed, that's what. Yes, but what then? Willie didn't know, but there's only one way to find out. So, are we agreed? Well, yes, I think so. So, why are we just waiting here? I don't know. And with that, Puig walked as slowly as he could to the bed curtains and drew one aside. The Queen was lying back amongst soft furs, her head cushioned on a folded lamb's wool fleece. Her hair, so filled with sunshine, lit up the area around her, and the desire in Puig's loins burned bright enough to match it. She smiled at him, and he climbed onto the bed, letting the curtain drop behind him. The warmth of his desire caused his own face to become tender, and he could feel himself grinning from ear to ear. She held her arms up to him then, her desire flowing out in almost palpable waves. Oh, at that moment, Puig realized his decision had been made, and he dropped his head briefly in sadness. Thinking of Aran's duty and the maids at the far end of the room, Puig took handfuls of furs and began thumping them against the bed, breathing heavily and deeply pained by the look of confusion on the silent queen's face. Then he planted a gentle kiss on her forehead and fell down beside her onto the bed and turned his back towards her. Puig could feel her distance as a solid wedge between them. He could see dying rose petals fall gently to the floor, and his heart ached. After a while, he got up and left the bed to return to his own chambers, clasping his robe back around himself. He drew it tightly about himself against the crisp, chill night air, and strode out into the corridors with his head cast down into the dark night. In our next episode, Puig practices the arts of war and goes off to defend the realm, nearly courting disaster in the process.
Ooh, exciting stuff. It must be so confusing for Puig, with everybody seeing him as around.
Especially as he's tried to deal with all those memories.
Very confusing indeed.
Yeah, I reckon.
Have you got a promo for us?
Well, it's not exactly a promo, but a new podcast has been launched by Barry Patterson called Woody Tales. Now, Barry is a well-known poet, and perhaps best known for his public persona as the Wild Man of the Woods, where he dresses up like the Green Man and tells stories and entertains at big events.
Well, that's good. We're always after great things to listen to. And I remember an interview with him on Dave the Bard's Druidcast a while back.
That's right. Well, I've chopped a few examples out of his first episode to give you an idea of what we can expect. Have a listen.
Cool.
And gone to green, the pride of the Angles, where the hawk stoops, shore thunders. Where the hare sleeps, hidden shield, force field of mountain lights, river brightness, sleek of migrant trout. And gone to glory, the pride of the Cymry, where green and gold slumber in the pool, where the sun dreams of forests that no one knows, mysteries of the hillside, stone voices of the unborn, unseen ancestor. And gone to Mount Pleasant, the song of the gales, where the bee makes her nest within the tree, where horses sleep upon the island of wind, woven of voices bitten by time and night, to be eaten, to be drunk to the full. And gone to green, the pride of the Britons, where sweet awakening of bird's song breaks fast, where rain makes circles upon my river tongue, speaks of ageless delights of earthing, by the wood's edge in Albion. Hello everyone and welcome. Welcome to the Wild Man of the Woods first ever podcast. I opened playing Lovely Joan, an old English traditional tune, on my bagpipe and reciting the poem Bardic Celebratory. Here on my podcast today, I have got two beautiful prize-winning stories, which were read at the National Forest Wood Fair, and a bit of chat about oak trees and a poem. Contact details and stuff like that will be at the end. A Midsummer Oak by Chris Parkin. The villagers live at the edge of the forest. They understand the forest and respect it. They hew its wood and eat its fruit and hunt its beasts. They read the signs of the rolling seasons in canopy and bark and moss, and they are clever. Their legend and lore revolve around the trees. One of the strangest of their legends is that of the Midsummer Moot. They say that on Midsummer's Eve, in the deepest and oldest glades of the forest, where men seldom venture, there is a gathering, and the most ancient trees will dance in the short Midsummer night. If you'd like to stay in touch with me, this is how you can do it. My webpage is songandstory.co.uk and easy to find. If you type Wild Man of the Woods into Google, you'll probably find me.
Well, that was fascinating. So where can we find him?
Well, so far, his podcast is only available on SoundCloud, as far as I can tell. But check out songandstory.co.uk, or one word. That's the Woody Tales website, and you can find out all about Barry. You'll find some pictures from his Facebook page in our show notes.
Excellent. Now, do we have anything else?
I think that's it. I think we've come to an end.
Goodness, that went way too quickly, didn't it?
It did.
So we'll wish you all many blessings, and for now say
you've been listening to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, available from CelticMythPodShow.com.
We hope you've enjoyed the show and will stay tuned for the next episode. You can send us an email or some voice feedback to Gary and Ruth at CelticMythPodShow.com. The show notes for this episode can also be found on the website. We'd like to say a special thank you to Coulan's Hounds, who provided us with the theme music for our show. You can find them at www.sfhounds.com. We'd also like to say a big thank you to Anne Roos, Master Harper, and Keltoria, with a K, Celtic New Age Music, who have both given the show unrestricted access to their music. And thanks again go to Diane Arkenstone and Kim Robertson, whose music has been used as some of the transitions you've heard in this show. You'll find links to all of these wonderful artists in the show notes at shownotes.celticmythpodshow.com.